the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
It's good to have you on board. Busy hour coming up. In 15 minutes, we'll get into today's betting card in Major League Baseball. More NFL, bottom of the hour. Denver Broncos take with Chad Anderson going to join the program from 104.3, the Fan in Denver. And here, we start the hour talking NFL and in that same division. And little L.A. Chargers talk here, Matt, with Fernando Ramirez, who is on the Progressive guest line, does a great job covering the Chargers for the Sporting Tribune. Fernando, thanks for the time today. How are you?
Oh, no, thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Last year was a great season. Year one under new head coach Jim Harbaugh, made the playoffs, thought they were going to be a threat. Did not go well in that playoff game, obviously, against Houston. But in year number two now under Jim Harbaugh, how much better can we anticipate this team being, in your opinion?
Well, I really think that what Jim and Joe Ortiz did is they sat down, they analyzed the three of their worst games, which was the game against Baltimore, his brother, the game against Tampa Bay, and the game against Houston. And all three games, they got out physicaled on the opposing defense really took their offense to the woodshed. And Ladd McConkey was the only one that basically did anything in those games. So I think what they did is they sat down, they analyzed, what do we need to do to get better? They decided to go out. They brought back Mike Williams, very cheap contract. And they drafted Trey Harris and Keandre Lambert-Smith. They signed Najee Harris. They brought in they drafted Amarian Hampton. They go out and they get Tyler Conklin, and they really try to revamp and give Justin Herbert a lot more weapons. Jim Harbaugh said it. How are we going to have a quarterback like that and not surround him with a plethora of weapons? So he said, I want to do right by Justin Herbert. So that's why they went out. They got all this talent around him. Now, the only thing is, obviously, they're depending on the drafting talent, the guys that they're bringing in, young players to step up the way that Joe Alt and Ladd McConkey did last season. And he even said it, sometimes you can't ask these guys to do that because Ladd McConkey's and Joe Alt's don't grow on trees. So they're depending on young guys to step up and to make plays with their quarterback. But when you have a quarterback like that, I guess you feel like your offense can do anything.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's another thing I loved about the Chargers a year ago, that Joe Alt, Ladd McConkey draft. Chargers knocked it out of the park. How'd you feel about the Chargers draft this spring?
I thought it was exactly a Jim Harbaugh-led draft. I thought they did another great job, especially with, like I said, they doubled down on receiver. Aronde Gadsden, who they got, I believe, in the fifth round, tight end, he is a guy that Derwin James told me a week ago, watch out for that guy. He is really good. And you saw during OTAs, when they get the pads on, obviously it's going to be interesting to see how he does. But Amarian Hampton, I think, is a big key component. Joe Ortiz told us, look, Drake May was there and his numbers were great. Drake May left and there was no drop-off. He got drafted. There was no drop-off. So they're really excited about the talent that Amarian Hampton brings to the Chargers. And last year they had J.K. Dobbins and they had Gus Edwards, who both – J.K. had actually a very good bounce-back season, but Gus really never got his foot his feet going in L.A. Here you have two running backs that are consistent, one in Najee Harris who doesn't miss any games. In college, Omarion didn't miss any as well. So you have two sturdy running backs, and I feel like, again, this team is going to be they're going to go as their running game goes to open up the play action. And I feel like that's why they brought Mekhi Becton also at right guard. Now that the mass on that right side of the offensive line is pretty amazing. But the center and the guard are still the areas where they cause a concern for the Chargers.
Do you think entering the season, the goal here for the team is to have pretty much a 50-50 split there in that backfield between those two players that you talked about?
I think so, but you know, when you do a 50-50 split, somebody always shines. I think what it's going to end up doing is whoever has the hot hand in the game is going to be the one that sees the bulk of the carries, because there may be some games where Najee's better. There may be some games where Amarian's really controlling the game in both the passing and the running game. So I could definitely see that, but I think their goal is going to be, I'd say probably about 50-50, if not a little bit less for each, and maybe throw in a third back just to get that going. But But I could definitely see 50-50 them wanting it the rest of the way. And like I said, both of them are sturdy guys that don't get injured, and that's definitely going to be something that Jim wants: consistency and obviously guys who can pass block and help block for the quarterback as well. That's a key thing that Jim's been talking about with both running backs. He wants good pass blocking running backs that are going to help keep the quarterback up.
Fernando Ramirez covers the Chargers for the Sporting Tribune. Fernando, or last year about this time, I really liked the Chargers a lot, and I had something to do with their draft, Jim Harbaugh, the hype, Justin Herbert, that combination. Also, though, it was a weak schedule, and I said there were 7 soft spots on that schedule a year ago, including the Raiders, and the Chargers went 5-2 in those 7 games. Can they be better this season but not win as many games? They went 11-6 a year ago.
Well, I actually had them basically at the same record. That middle spot where you see it, I mean, when you go, I think it's from the Dolphins up until their bye week, that schedule is pretty win. I mean, it's going to be tough. They're tough opponents, and we all know how the NFL is, but that's going to be their sweet spot. That's going to be the spot where they're going to have to take advantage, because look at that end. You start off in the division, and then on that 5th game, oh, hey, here comes Jaden Daniels to SoFi Stadium. Then you end with the Raiders, who are going to be a lot tougher this year. Eagles on Monday Night Football, at Chiefs, at Cowboys, then a rematch of the wild card game with the Texans, and then you finish up at Denver. I mean, that's a brutal schedule. So that middle of the part is going to be their sweet spot for them to be able to muster up some wins. But Jim already said that the most important games are the first 3 weeks of the season, because it's going to dictate a lot of what they are. Especially, like I said, you start off with Kansas City in Brazil, at Raiders on Monday Night Football. Obviously, Chris Brown is going to be at SoFi Stadium, so the Chargers are going to have to start off on the road for 2 games in a row. And then, obviously, they come back and they play Bo Nix and the Broncos before heading out to New York. So that's a tough it's a tough schedule, but that middle part is really going to be where the Chargers are going to need to take advantage and win a lot of those games, because that ending is just, like I mentioned, that's a brutal way to end the season.
So you had them winning about 11 games again this year, despite that tough record. Let me ask you this about the defense then. He wasn't there for every game because he wouldn't miss time. He would get hurt. But will the presence of Joey Bosa in the locker room, will that be missed at all?
I'm sure it will be, because Joey was one of these like dry humored guys who would just all of a sudden throw out a joke, and guys obviously would love that. But they're really depending a lot on Tuli Tuipulotu to step up, the 30-year edge rusher out of USC. Mm-hmm. Last year, he had a stretch in the middle of the season where in 8 games in a row, he had 8.5 sacks. So that was huge for them. But then kind of towards the back end of the season, he kind of slowed down a little bit. They brought in Kyle Kennard. Well, they drafted Kyle Kennard from South Carolina, who the guy is he's pretty big, and he has a motor on him, and he was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, I believe. And Bud Dupree, also a veteran who felt more and more comfortable as the season went along. So it's going to be interesting to see, because you can't depend your whole pass rush on Khalil Mack, who's getting older. You're going to need to not have him go every single down when they're on defense. So they're going to have to rely on some of these younger guys to kind of step up and help with the edge rush. But on the defensive side, my biggest question mark is the pass rush, because of the youth and inexperience that they have at that position. And obviously Khalil Mack is getting older, even though he still had a very solid year in 2024.
2-part question for you here, Fernando. Talking about the defense, Puna Ford is gone, run stuffing nose tackle. He's switched sides of the city. He's going to the Rams. How big a loss is that going to be? And the other question is Justin Herbert. What do you make of his performance in the playoff game? He had 23 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in the regular season and threw 4 picks in that loss to the Texans. Where does he stand going into this season as well?
Well, to answer your first question, they went out and they got other guys. Last year, nobody had really heard much of Puna Ford until he really got plugged into the Chargers' defensive line, and he did really well. They went out, they got Deshaun Hamm, they got Naquan Jones, they got a bunch of guys that they feel like can make up for the loss of Puna. They drafted Jamari Caldwell. So they went out and they got guys that they feel like could do that. They brought back Tyrre Tart who was a big piece of their defensive line last year. So they're going to try and do it by committee. I mean, essentially, you take away one, they bring in two. So that's is essentially what they did all around the team, is that they lost one player, they brought in two. So they're really happy about their defensive line, and they feel like they could have guys that are going to step up and make up for the work of Puna. And on the Justin Herbert side, it was bound to catch up to them. I mean, you go into a season where your best receiver is a second round rookie who had a great season, but then really there was a drop off after that. I mean, you go look at the stats of that game, 197 receiving yards and a touchdown from Ladd McConkey. The next player was Will Disley with two catches for 18 yards. Yep. So there was a huge discrepancy. They needed something like that. Justin looks motivated. Players keep on talking about the intensity. He has a different intensity in practice. So they feel like he's ready to, with all these new weapons, to take advantage of that and improve the offense. But like I said, they're going to be depending on a lot of youth to step up and play well for them.
Hey, Fernando, that was a great spot. Everybody can follow you on X at Real F Ramirez, and also read him at the Sporting Tribune as well. Thank you, sir. We appreciate that.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a nice rest of your week and have a great summer.
Back at you. And he joined us on the Progressive Guest Line here today.
Harbaugh took over a team that went 5-12 and won 11 games, which the schedule had a lot to do with that last year.
Oh, yeah, it did. It did. 11 wins. Is that doable with the schedule this year?
I think 10's realistic.
We'll get into today's Major League Baseball card, including some red-hot players with props next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Welcome in. It is Follow the Money. Mitch Moss along with Matt Eumanns. He is in for a vacationing Pauly Howard this week. We're live in downtown Las Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. Matt, throughout the summer months, now specifically with the NBA season behind us, NHL is also done. And so on the betting board on a daily basis, it's going to be a lot of baseball and then maybe some WNBA. And then, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you don't have golf. So it's like not a lot of games going on, not a lot of action. Do you get involved with player props at all or much, so to speak, in Major League Baseball?
Very little. That's something I should probably do more. I look at those plays that Jensen Lewis puts out, and actually you put out a decent amount of player props in baseball too. You guys do a lot more research on those type of things typically than I do. You get kind of stuck in your ways sometimes as a bettor. This is one thing about baseball betting I've had to adjust to too. Just you get used to so many years betting the full game.
Right.
And it's smarter in a lot of cases to bet the first five, but you got to practice, you got to condition yourself, make it a habit to bet the first five instead of playing the full game. Or you bet a half unit first five, half unit for the game, you want to play it. I'm not in the habit of betting baseball player props. I probably should be, because I think that's a market you can take advantage of. I know you guys put out some pretty sharp plays on that.
Well, I will say this, over time, I've gotten to the point where I spend my entire day handicapping player props and I forget about the game. Mm-hmm. And that can be a major mistake as well. So I'll go days on end without, I never even know what the betting number is on the game. That's silly,
really?
Right? I mean, that's, yeah. First of all, I mean, those are more available and, to us out here in Nevada, and obviously the game, but baseball beats too are it's the least fun of any sport. Right, because Nick Bogdanovich's famous line here on this show many, many years ago, but you need a bottle of whiskey and a revolver to bet the sport. I feel stronger about that on baseball than any other. The beats in baseball are unbelievably excruciating.
Beats are excruciating in anything. I mean, if you bet golf and you had Tommy Fleetwood on Sunday,
that blows.
Was excruciating.
That hurts.
Right? I was lucky I was on the other side with Keegan Bradley. But baseball beats can be brutal, too, dude. How about that D-backs Braves game a couple weeks ago when the Braves lead 10-4 going to the ninth inning and lost 11-10?
That's correct, yeah.
The bullpens are what drive you crazy more than anything. And that's why I said I'm trying to bet more first fives, or bet half unit first five, half unit game, because the bullpens will drive you crazy in baseball. You're leading for 2.5 hours, and then one dope comes in the eighth or ninth inning and gives up three runs without getting an out and blows up your entire bet.
It's a killer.
So that's why you have to try. I think you really have to try to take the bullpens out of the equation. If you hate a team's bullpen, you can't be betting the full game.
Full game. You're gonna look more towards the first five. Now this game is in a delay, and that, you know, I was saying earlier today, the ultimate hold your nose kind of game would have been taking Severino plus like a run and a half with the A's, but the A's have a hideous bullpen, and Severino's numbers on the road, right, have been elite. He has not allowed a home run. It's a sub-1 ERA, and to grab like a half a run in the first five against Skubal tonight may have been the better option.
Yeah, I think so. And again, you're betting against maybe the best pitcher in baseball right now, so you don't feel great about that.
No, that's this is the
but
type
I agree.
Of thing.
I think that's probably the way you would play it, but you know, I looked at that last night and I said, nah, yeah, I could live without making that bet today.
That's the kind of game that if I were to bet it, I would not watch 1 second of it. I'd go back in like 90 minutes and just see. I'd be like, rip the Band-Aid off. Is it 7-0 Tigers, end of five, or is it actually 1-0 A's?
You know what? I've said that about 1,000 times about NBA games over the years. You'd probably be better off. You wouldn't take years off your life if you just bet the NBA game and then took a nap, woke up when it was over, and checked the score.
I believe in that.
With all the runs, you go back each. But again, I've changed my attitude about that too, because live betting NBA games presents so many great opportunities. You have to watch the game and live bet them.
Right, right.
But it is agonizing to watch NBA games when you make a full game bet and you get a 17-2 run and a 14-3 run the other way. It just goes back and forth.
Every game, pretty much.
I remember once, this is when, I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago, when I really started to sour on NBA betting in terms of, I'm not going to do this so much because it just aggravates you every night of the week. I had a team I laid like two and a half with one night. I left my house, drove down two blocks to like Arby's to pick up some food and come back. Mm-hmm. When I left the house, had a 17-point lead. Mm-hmm. I get back, can't be 10 minutes later. I come back and they're down five. I just kind of dropped the bag on the couch and sat down and said, why am I doing this?
Yeah, sure. I know.
Betting the NBA will drive you crazy if you sit there and watch the games. You're up 17, 10 minutes later, you're down five.
Yep.
But that's why it's such a great live betting sport, too.
Well,
live
see,
betting league.
To your point, like if you make a bet before the game starts, if you're strong on one side of it, unless your objective is to try to middle the game, I think you are better off just making it pregame and then not even watching it. Because you're not going to, then you're, by the way, when you are watching it, you might try to get off the game or get off your original bet anyway, because it might not be going the right way for you.
Exactly, but where the best opportunities are trying to set up middles in all these games.
That's, right, because you will get the inevitable. I mean, it's coming at some point. In most of these games, it's going to be a 15-2 run from one way. And then the other side, it's going to be 13-0, whatever it is. I mean, that just that's how the sport is now. With three-point shooting, a team could make, we saw that with Caitlin Clark in the WNBA against the Liberty. She drained like 3 30-footers in like a minute or whatever it was. That happened. That can happen in the NBA in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were times during the playoff run where people said, well, the Pacers would be better if they had Caitlin Clark, you know, because she could knock down threes.
Yeah.
That's the type of shooter the OKC Thunder were missing, right?
Yeah.
But then I've watched Caitlin Clark over the last week, and she's not getting it done either.
Yeah.
Mentioned that earlier in the show tonight. I watched some of that Indiana Fever, Las Vegas Aces game. When we were in San Diego over the weekend, I just had it on in the hotel before I left the room. She was 1 for 10 for 3 with 8 turnovers.
Wow.
And nobody talks about the games like that.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
And she was pretty poor in the previous game, too, I think, when the Fever played and played at Golden State.
Golden State, they got beat by 11 in that game.
Yeah.
And I think they were, what, 11-point favorites there.
How about this? This is an oddity. Somebody who bets the WNBA told me this week. I didn't even realize it. So the season is 44 games?
Yep.
The Golden State Valkyries' season win total was 7.5. They've already won 6 games.
Wow. It was that low?
Yeah. The expansion team, right?
Yeah. So they were, like, the expectations were about 7-37 on the year?
Yeah. 7.5 for the win total. Already won 6 games.
Wow, okay.
It's 6-6 or 6-7, something like that.
Yeah. Cal Raleigh in his last 7 games.
He could win MVP, by the way.
6 home runs, 14 RBIs. I have a text. My buddy Chad in Seattle, who pays obviously Mariners fan, goes to the games, you know, occasionally, likes to bet, he sent me a text on May 30th. Like, maybe it's time we take a little 100, 125 to one on Cal here to win the MVP.
I agree.
I poo-pooed it.
Really?
I said it. I told him, I'm like, it's going to take a Judge injury. It's the only way to win. Boy, is that embarrassing at this point. He's down to plus 550 right now. And I think he might be the winner if the season ended today. I don't know how they would look at that. They're in second place right now, but I do think voters will put a lot of stock into that dude playing catcher.
Oh, I do too. I think he's got a shot. And in fact, when he was trying to sell you on that bet and you said only a Judge injury, I was saying the same thing at the time, only a Judge injury. But a Judge injury has happened. You know, if he misses a month, all of a sudden Kyle Raleigh becomes the favorite.
Well, no question at that point, yeah.
And that could certainly happen. We've seen it happen with Aaron Judge before.
Yeah, so. I saw that his home run prop the other day at Wrigley when it was 90 and the winds were blowing out. I think it was plus 150. and he hit one, of course.
And you wanted to bet it. You wanted to bet it, too.
Right?
Seriously,
yeah.
Well, that was like a slow pitch softball game.
Oh,
with the wind blowing hot. Humid and wind blowing out of Wrigley Field.
That's and that total I think was 12.5. It's an automatic play. And just based on the conditions at Wrigley Field, you have to play the over in that spot.
Not only that, you have to play it over 14.5 plus 250, over 15.5, right?
Yeah.
That's one of those ladder plays you would make thinking this game could be 12-10.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I think we have Winner's Circle here.
I believe we do. Winner's Circle proxies right out here Sportsbook right now.
Mm-hmm.
You see Paulie Howard out there?
No, he's on vacation. He wouldn't be here.
Time's running out. Enter to win a free entry into the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest proxy service included with $21 million in guaranteed prizes up for grabs. The deadline to enter is tomorrow, Wednesday, June 25th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. So time is running out. Winners will be announced live this Friday on a numbers game with Gil Alexander. And the winner gets an exclusive strategy access to Gil all season long. Mitch, what's that worth?
I'd say priceless.
It's invaluable.
Yeah.
Go to winnerscircleproxy.com/vsin to enter now. That's winnerscircleproxy.com/vsin.
Up next, we'll talk more AFC West here. Chad Andrus is going to join the program from Denver. Is this the year a team other than the Chiefs finally takes down the AFC West? We'll ask him next on Follow the Money. It's vsin, the Sports Betting Network. Tell you, felt pretty good today talking NFL. Our pro guide is coming out later on this week here at VSiN, and to hit it several times throughout a three-hour show, that's a pretty good feeling here in late June.
I love it. We can talk NFL every day until August, and actually yesterday in the show we talked college football with Brian Edwards for a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
This is the time. This is the dead zone of sports talk radio.
Yeah, and here
but
more,
it's also a great time to crank up the football talk.
Absolutely. And now more of that with Chad Andrus from 104.3 The Fan in Denver as he joins the Progressive Guest Line. Chad, good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm well, gentlemen. And I'm glad I'm not there when it's 110 anymore.
Yeah. You used to be, but no longer. Now, you have a much more mild life in Denver, right? So Matt and I were both making the case for Denver this year. Matt, with the win total on the division as well, I like both those bets. We thought that you're going to come on today and poo-poo that idea and say, guys, don't do it. Not in year number two with Bo Nix. Is that going to be the case?
No, I'm not going to poo-poo it. I'm not the Bo Nix cheerleader that exists on a lot of the airwaves and a lot of the digital space here in Denver that most people are. But I'm not going to poo-poo the team either, and it's primarily because of the defense and what they have available to them. And if they have addressed the needs that they saw as their primary deficiencies last year on the defensive side, the defense can be really, really special. The one thing I will say about that is, and I told this to Matt already, is, the Broncos are going to lead the NFL in the if they're healthy projections. Because when you get Dre Greenlaw and Hufanga out on the field, and Drew Sanders is a guy who has been injured, but coming back, I think you can expect a big jump and a surprise season from that guy. If they're healthy, the defense is going to be something that, that could be borderline spectacular, and that's going to give them a chance for any of those bets that you guys outlined.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. The when you're talking about Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga coming off injuries in San Francisco, you're definitely going to have be a little bit skeptical about that. I look at this Broncos defense. Patrick Surtain, NFL Defensive Player of the Year. You draft Jade Barron from Texas, the corner. Put him back there in the secondary with Surtain. Nick Bonito had 13.5 sacks as an edge rusher. I'm looking at the depth all across the defensive line, the linebacker unit, and the secondary. And I think this defense can withstand a couple injuries. Not that you want that, but when you handicap football, you always have to keep an open mind that, hey, can this team handle the, do you have enough depth to handle the injuries? I think the Denver defense does. I think it's that deep. Is this a top three defense in the NFL when everyone's healthy? Do you think so?
I think they can be, but the challenge I have in getting there right now is how much of a priority it was for them in the offseason, getting those two guys from the 49ers and the focus primarily of their draft after, you know, the RJ Harvey pick aside. They were so concerned about it because in Sean Payton's mind, he is having recurring nightmares where he just hears three things over and over and over again, and he has been for, you know, the better part of 9 months, and it's Baltimore, Cincinnati, Buffalo. Baltimore, Cincinnati, Buffalo. They couldn't get off the field against those teams. And I think that's why you see what the Broncos did this offseason in terms of focusing on their defense, when a lot of people thought, well, they need offensive playmakers. They got a bunch of no-names on offense. They got to have somebody who can stretch the field, who can provide a big play. And they did the exact opposite in free agency in the draft, because against the heavyweights in the AFC outside of Kansas City that they competed with and should have really beaten twice the last season, against Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Buffalo, their defense couldn't get off the field.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then back to Knicks for a second here. And I look, I know that we're going to hear a lot of people suggest that in year two there's going to be some regression and it's not going to go as well for him in his sophomore campaign as it did last year. And I, by the way, I don't know if anybody was really high on Bo Nix other than Sean Payton coming out of college there at Oregon. Now, but does that, again, get flipped because, like, Sean Payton has done this for so long and it is basically like an elite coach? And so you think that he's going to be, like, the stabilizing force behind Nick's not really falling apart?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is Bo Nix was already 24 years old with 71 games in college when he was drafted. So I think some of the stuff you may see from other quarterbacks or some of the hurdles they have to overcome, like the, you know, the slump that a lot of people said CJ Stroud was in last year. Well, he was, what, 21 years old? Or, you know, Anthony Richardson, who never played and, you know, looks good and amazing for a play or two here or there and then completely can't get anything together and falls apart. I think it's different with Knicks just because he needs to be looked at more with the peers of like a Jordan Love and the guys that are closer to his age more so than he does just a second year quarterback, because I think the experience and the maturity that he has combined with working with Peyton in the offense and Peyton knowing exactly what he wants out of his quarterback, I think those are the kind of things that help prevent some of that regression. I think he was always going to be a really high floor guy. The question is how high is the ceiling?
Those are good points. Actually, Broncos offense up from 19th in the league in scoring to last year 10th at 25 points per game. I'm looking at the offensive line depth, you know, Garrett Bowles, Mike McGlinchey, Quinn Miners, Ben Powers, running back depth, wide receiver. You got playmakers behind Cortland Sutton here. What is the weakness, if there is one, on the Denver offense? Because I'm having a hard time finding one.
Game breakers. They don't have anybody that just really tears apart or pops the top off of a defense outside of what Marvin Mims is capable of. And, you know, when Sean Payton got here, there was a lot of stuff to figure out and clean up, but it took a solid year and a half before he unlocked Marvin Mims at all. Right. And that's really the only guy that can run. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does and how many different looks, how many different ways they try to get him the ball. But outside of him, they still don't have speed. RJ Harvey is supposed to help that. I'm a little bit skeptical in the backfield. To me, he's got to prove he's somehow different than Jaleel McLaughlin or Tyler Bidet or Blake Watson that they have on the practice squad. He's just another small guy, and I don't know that he's any different than anybody else. And the thing about Sean Payton, guys, like, you're old enough, you remember, and Mitch, I know on your end, you watch a lot of TV. You remember Sex and the City on HBO, right?
Matt loves it. His favorite show of all time.
I still watch the replays, yeah.
Oh, okay. Carrie Bradshaw in her closet, right? An outfit for every occasion, right? That's Sean Payton in his playbook. He's got a personnel combination for every different play. So when fans, you know, scream for, I want a bell cow running back. I want somebody that's going to get 17, 19 carries a game. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen with R.J. Harvey. It's not going to happen with J.K. Dobbins. It's not going to happen with those guys. He's got a different outfit for every occasion. He's got a different, you know, playbook. He's got a different personnel group for every play he wants to run. And it's just always a mix and match trying to get that perfect play in because he thinks his play call is going to be the difference more than the talent on the field is.
That's one thing that does kind of annoy you a little bit about Sean Payton is he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room.
Oh, that's, quite evident.
Trying to be too clever with some of that stuff. I see what you're talking about there. All right, just how about this? So the Circus Survivor is going to be up around $20 million. Broncos over the Titans in week one is going to be a popular play. Would you be hesitant to make that play? Denver, a 7.5-point favorite over the Titans, who will start a rookie quarterback in that game.
Hey, if Cam Ward in his first start beats that defense and beats Sean Payton, then you know what? Take my money. I lose. I'm out. if you don't take the Broncos in the first 2 weeks, all right, tell me what you're saving it for. Because weeks 3, 4, and 5 right. are the Chargers, Bengals, and Eagles. And 4 of the last 6 weeks are the Commanders, Packers, Chiefs, and Chargers. So, you know, finding a hole in the middle when they're playing the Cowboys or the Texans, something like that, the Jets, you're going to take them then. Or take him in a road game? No, you're going to take him against Cam Ward in week one, and if he beats you, then so be it.
True or false, the Chiefs win the division?
False.
So then the Broncos do?
I'm looking for better numbers. So far, I've only seen 11. I want it like closer, maybe 13 or 15. I want to bet the exact order with Chargers, Broncos, Chiefs, Raiders, and Broncos, Chargers, Chiefs, Raiders. So the Chiefs finished third to get the best number, but it's still the highest I've seen is 11-1. I think I need a little bit better than that.
Very good. You can follow him on X. He's at Chad Andrus, Andrus, 104.3, the Fan of Denver. Thanks, pal. We appreciate that.
See you, fellas.
There you go. Looking for a more exciting way to bet. It's called Xcuta. It's spelled X-C-U-T-T-A, and it's the future of futures wagering. It combines the adrenaline of a live auction with the strategy of sports betting or fantasy picks. It's easy to use, and it works for any sport. Over 1,000 teams, players, golfers, drivers, Xcuta is adaptable to any sport, even horse racing, and it's free to sign up. You pick who you want to bid on, customize your own auction, set your winnings, and invite your friends to play. You can even create auctions for free. Xcuta has free auctions every day at 3, 6, and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Send an email to support@xcuta.com, mention VSiN, and they will give you a 3-month player promo code to get started. Xcuta is a sports Calcutta. Again, that's xcuta.com, X-C-U-T-T-A, up next in Pocket Plays. And I'm shocked ESPN is going down this path, but in a good way.
Determine the winner of any given college basketball game.
Someone gives you 10,000 to 1 on anything. You take it. Take it. Take it.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1. You're right.
Matt, this to me qualified as an excruciating bet to make. It played out that way. First of all, because it was an under for the entire series, not just for one game. So then the NBA Finals takes like a month to play the way it feels, right? It was under SGA, 33.5 points. It was a winner. He ended up averaging like 32.5 points per game. But, like, never once until, like, the end of Game 6 did I actually feel kind of comfortable because he needed, I think, 52 to beat me in Game 7.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things where is he going to go for 40 tonight? Is he going to go to the free throw line 15 times? He's taken 28 shots, you know, whatever. So, boy, oh, boy. That's one of those things about it's tough to even watch because that's just – it's tough to – you know, when you're going up against a guy like that where the volume's going to be fast and furious – going to be lucky to win.
I talked about on the show last Friday night, Will Hill and I were on previewing Game 7. I said, I can guarantee you, almost guarantee you, I can't personally, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will have over 10.5 free throw attempts in Game 7.
Uh-huh.
He had 12.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, when a guy's going to have that many free throw attempts, he's probably going to put up a 30-point game.
Pretty much.
He does this routinely, and it's always a quiet 30. You don't realize... Yeah. That he's putting 30 up. I think the thing that saved you on that bet was that the Pacers won Game 6 in a blowout and that the OKC starters sat most of the fourth quarter in that game. And I think SGA had, what, 24?
21 or something like that.
Yeah,
20
in that game.
Yep.
And that's what held that under the total for the series. But,
sure. If that doesn't happen, he probably goes for 30 in that game and then, you know, he's not going to need 52 to beat me then.
Right.
You know, the next night. So, anyway, tip my cap to him and the team, obviously, for winning the title on Sunday night. Now people are making a big deal out of it, putting an asterisk next to it. I mean, it does completely suck what happened to Halliburton. I mean, Jeff Seeley an hour and a half ago basically said, you know, for him personally, when's the last time that, you know, in a big game like that, a deciding game, mm-hmm. and the player, I mean, that's just...
The only other thing that came to my mind was, I remember, was it Texas-Alabama national championship game at the Rose Bowl when Colt McCoy got knocked out?
Yep, definitely.
Not to say Texas would have won the game anyway. Well, not to say the Pacers would have won the game Sunday night. Anyway, I think the Pacers would have had a great chance to cover.
Absolutely.
If Halliburton does go down. Still have a shot to win. But yeah.
You know what I found kind of refreshing, by the way, is how dejected the players were on Indiana after the game. Like, it really gutted them to lose. Not only the game, but also what happened to Halliburton.
Right.
Like, you don't see that all the time, right? Guys just, happy, smiling. They're over it. And then 10 minutes after the game's over with and they lose, like, they're over it, okay? They'll move on with my life.
You know, it was also, I agree with you there. What also was surprising is OKC Thunder celebration was not that crazy.
And they didn't do anything.
They went over and shaking hands with the Pacers players. And you see all that beer that went unopened in
the
locker room?
Right. Jalen Williams had his first drink ever.
Are you serious?
He's 24 years old.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
You believe that? I guess.
Well, it's very relatable for us here.
I could say.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I think I had my first drink at about 10. Stole a beer out of the refrigerator.
100%. That happened at some point. I think I might have been 6, something like that. I don't know. Dad gave me a beer. Here, try this. What do you think of it?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
That might have been it. It was either that or Old Milwaukee. It had to be one or the other.
Right.
Paige Becker's over 19.5 points going back to Friday at plus 154. That was a winner. Tonight, going to go Braves. They play a lot of money on the Mets. I hate going against it, but, I mean, it's Strider against Montas making his first start here. Strider, pretty good recent form right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mets are in a really bad funk. Give me the Braves minus 130 in this game tonight.
I like that play. That's actually on my short list of... favorites worth playing today. I thought that the Braves probably worth a shot. I like the Giants tonight, the Red Sox tonight, but those are big prices. So this goes back to what I was talking about with the round robins. I'm going to play a four-team round robin in baseball tonight. Not putting this up as an official play. Just kind of like one of those things you take a shot with in baseball when I don't like laying 160 or 170 on the favorites. But you can play a four-team round robin, the threes and fours, and play a few favorites. Throw one dog on there. If the dog hits, you're going to have a nice ticket. And the dog I'm going to throw on there tonight is the Reds. Reds are plus 148 right now at Circa. But you got a small favorite in the Braves, a little bit bigger favorites in the Red Sox and Giants, and a dog in the Reds for a round robin. But my official play, and we talked about this earlier in the show with Jensen Lewis too. It's hot. It's humid. You got a rookie... Chase Burns, who's making his major league debut tonight for the Reds, and he's going to be jacked up. He's got a lot of emotions and nerves to deal with, facing a good Yankees lineup. the launching pad in Cincinnati. Let's play over 9.5 in Reds and Yankees Reds in Cincinnati.
Okay, very good. You also have a couple of bets in the NBA draft?
I do. Actually, a couple yesterday, I threw up those NFL win totals. And for the NBA draft, doing a lot of work on this last night. I don't love these plays, but I like them enough to make them. And Liam McNeely from Connecticut, the freshman, under 21.5 draft position. The thing that I think is going to sell NBA teams a little bit more on McNeely's stock. And Mitch, I know you remember this game well. I thought he played really well against Florida in the NCAA tournament.
Terrific.
22 points in that two-point loss to Florida. We were talking about a guy who's 21 years old, 6'7", 6'8", can shoot the three. He didn't shoot a great last season, 32%, but he also was injured. He had to deal with an ankle injury, and he missed some games. Liam McNeely, 1 year at UConn, I think a lot of upside. I want to play him under 21.5. I think he goes somewhere in the teens. I like him a lot. High ceiling as a player. How about Ryan Kalkbrenner from Creighton? 7'1 with a 7'6 wingspan. Had about 3 blocks per game last season. He can shoot the three. In fact, Kalkbrenner shot the three at 34.4%. I think he's going to be a late first-round pick. I profile him as a Boston Celtics-type draft pick.
That would make some sense. And I have some breaking news on the Boston Celtics. We'll get to here in a second.
Okay. Kalkbrenner in the first round. Those are both minus 115 up at DraftKings. By the way, Tim Murray and I will be hosting an NBA draft special on Wednesday night on VSIM Primetime.
Excellent.
And we'll have several. I know Tim's working on his NBA mock draft, trying to find some more NBA draft best bets. But let's go with those two for now, plus the Yankees-Reds over 9.5. Our new NFL betting guide drops next week. Early access means a better shot at spotting value in the futures markets before the lines move. Now's the perfect time to join with our football special, just $175 for full VSIN Pro access from today through the Super Bowl. It's every sport we cover every day at a special early bird rate. The sooner you sign up, the more you get out of it. You'll be first in line for our NFL betting guide, your playbook for the season, packed with team previews, power ratings, and best bets. You also get daily best bets on the email from our host and guest. Real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa. Live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app. And much more. Go to vsin.com/subscribe now and lock in the football special for just $175. vsin.com/subscribe.
All right. So the full, I guess, call it what you will, rebuild or I'm not going to say fire sale. That's too strong. Mm-hmm. For the Boston Celtics is continuing. Last night, of course, they traded Jrue Holiday. And I actually like this deal for Boston to the Portland Trailblazers for Anthony Simons.
I do, too.
Yeah. Here's the breaking news from Shams Charania over at ESPN. Boston, Atlanta, and Brooklyn are finalizing a three-team trade that sends Kristaps Porzingis and a second-round pick to the Hawks. Terrence Mann and Atlanta's number 22 pick to the Nets. At George Niang in a second rounder to the Boston Celtics.
You know, I heard this morning that the Spurs were interested in Porzingis. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. Mm-hmm. Is this the sort of deal you think is another type of salary dump by the Celtics?
The way it feels to me, yeah. And now, so they're going to be...
If you're going to tear this thing down, you got no Tatum, you got no Holiday, you might as well trade Porzingis.
Sure, of course, yep. Yeah. I don't know if I'd trade Derek White. It's the only thing.
I love Derek White.
So do I.
I would keep him.
Unless the package in return would be absolutely massive.
That's one guy. That guy, he's a keeper for me.
Yep.
Porzingis has got some weird health issues too, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. So the Hawks are 50-1 to win the East.
Well, like I said, anything up in that neighborhood is probably worth a shot. Sixers, Hawks, because the East really feels wide open.
Yeah. I mean... Again, the teams at the very top, you said this earlier, I completely agree. I think the Cavaliers, by default, being the favorite, it's kind of a fragile favorite there, mm-hmm. in my opinion. The Knicks, okay, they don't have a coach yet. Don't know what the hell's going to happen there. I mean, have fun betting the Magic. They're down to plus 425 at the book I'm looking at right now to win the East. Clearly not going to bet that number.
Got some good young talent, but there's no value in that number.
Zero. The Celtics are, 6-1? Complete pass. Then, I mean, the Eastern Conference, the Pacers were an absolute bomb this year to win it. I think we're going to be in a pretty good spot here to have at least one or two other teams next year to be, do the same thing.
Probably. Got a feel for all those Pacers bettors who had 100-1, 120-1. Hopefully you found ways to make money off those tickets.
Yeah. Great job, Matt. Thanks for sitting in for Paulie today. Stay tuned. More on that trade. And 4 hours coming up with Tim Murray on VSiN Primetime. Good luck tonight.